pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. Nathan is away because he's reffing Derby like an asshole. But with me today to talk about Tau list building and tournament prep is recurring guest host, painting legend Danny Beyer, purveyor of the Immaterium Press blog. If you haven't checked it out, we have linked to it on our site in the past.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Just spent the last little while getting ready for a tournament, as you were saying. And yeah, ready to rock. Let's do this.
Yeah, don't look at me. You have to look at the microphone.
I'll figure this out eventually.
It's odd with podcasting because it's hard to get yourself out of that mode here. But we have the mic gain turned up a little bit higher so that everyone's getting picked up. So you might get some shuffling in the background. We also have Mr. Matty Damon, Space Marine aficionado and loser aficionado, I should say, as well.
Blackout aficionado
as well. Matt Damon is here with us. We're going to talk about Tau list building, but before we get kicked into that, let's talk about what we're drinking. I'm drinking maple whiskey. Danny, what are you drinking?
I got Grey Goose and Coke today.
Mm.
I brought myself some Bud Light Platinum, because to keep on with the trend of drinking random beers.
Random beer time
when we go to Lang's.
Every time Matt's on the show, it's another random beer. All right, so let's talk a little bit about...
With a review.
Okay, so hey, let's talk about Bud Light Platinum. It's an aluminum bottle. Oh, that's so sweet. It's so light, it's actually lighter than Corona. But it's 6%, so I guess.
Allegedly 6%. I'm sure there's a few class action suits on the subject right now.
Well, no, actually, the funny thing is the reason why in Country Stand, why they had to be in aluminum bottles is because they couldn't bring the glass bottles into Country Stand. So they have to be aluminum. In the States, if you go to Vegas or anything like that, they're actually in a blue bottle, and they glow in the dark when you're in black light.
Oh my God, I almost just fell asleep right now. All right, so... We're all drinking. We had a game. Danny and I played some 40K with his Marines versus my Orcs. He pantsed me. I quit at the top of turn two because it was just clearly not going my way, but it was a good game to get in there. Unfortunately, we didn't have anyone playing Tau because all of you Tau players don't have Tau armies anymore, really, necessarily. So that's kind of where we get stuck.
Got a handful in boxes somewhere.
But that's kind of what I did this week in hobby. I've been painting up a bunch of shit. I'm trying to get my vampire counts done. In order to play an Onslaught. So I've got to paint up, I posted on the Facebook page, I've got a Terrorgeist, I've got a Corpse Cart with a Master Necromancer, 10 Ghouls and 10 Knights, but I think I'm on track. I'm painting one knight in less than an hour with the current scheme that I'm doing, and I'm pretty happy with them, so I'll definitely have it done. I've never not had shit done for a tournament, and I'm not going to start now.
I've been there, it's not very fun.
No. Well, the last Onslaught that you and I played in, Matty, we were up until, what, 4 in the morning?
Yeah.
Getting that fucking Rhino, the Stonehorn done.
You called me to come to your place and be like, sleep over, and then we'll drive there.
Well, you were supposed to come, but then you bitched out, and you were like, oh, no, I'm going to go out and party. I was like, fuck you, I need your help.
Yeah,
I need your help. Come help me.
It's just not a tournament unless you're painting in a hotel room the day before. That's just the way it is.
That's usually the way it comes down to, yeah. All right, so... I'll just let you guys know. We can back away a little bit from the mic because we are hitting the peaks here. Okay, so this week in hobby, Matt, what were you up to?
I was building Grey Knights, actually. I have a 20 Paladin army with Drago that I'm building for about 1850. I got all custom bases that I got actually cast for me finally, and I'm in the middle of building them right now. They look really good. I'm just excited to get it done. It's going to be a pretty fun army to do. It's going to be fully customized, fully painted, full detail, kind of going to be a show army more than anything else.
All right. Damn.
I am frantically painting Raven Guard for the tournament coming up. So I believe on the painting desk I have left a couple of Dreadnought arms and random odds and ends like that, a couple of Hyperios launcher bits, a few more Stern Guard, and that's about it.
Your list looked relatively complete on the table from what I saw.
Looks pretty good from about a foot away.
Yeah, that's all you need.
I mean, and the guys that are just primer black, they're Raven Guard, so you know, they're extra stealthy.
It's a black and white army.
Yeah, if you've got the FFF standard, the From 5 Feet standard, I think that you're pretty okay with it. I don't think it's that big of a deal. You can be relatively happy with it. All right.
Because we already know you have enough nice painted
armies. Exactly, we're okay with that.
Fair enough, I'll take that.
All right, so let's review the listener polls from last week. We had two here. Which SimCity did you feel was the best between Nathan and myself? Unfortunately, Nathan won by about a 2-vote margin. Danny voted for me. I don't think, Matt, did you vote?
I voted for you.
Yeah, I mean...
So half of your votes are here.
I don't know what kind of fanboys were voting for Nathan's boring-ass grid city, but Nathan wins mostly because his city also wasn't a fucking disaster area. Mine was just comically terrible the whole way through.
Which is ironic, because his actually had a disaster hit, so...
Yeah, that was the next... He had the monster. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see it, but yeah, all right.
You didn't get any points with the city judging people who actually take SimCity seriously.
Oh, really? It was the SimCity connoisseurs voted for my city.
There's people that take SimCity seriously?
Yeah, well, for sure.
That's a thing that happens? Okay.
Well, I think it's not EA. And I don't know, maybe the hardcore people have been playing SimCity 4. But yeah, that's pretty much where it landed.
You get that for free now.
You do get that for free. Although we took Dead Space for free, that's a whole other story. The next viewer listener poll that we had here was, which game would you like to see Lang and Nathan play next? And it is tied between Minecraft and StarCraft, 11 votes each. And then I was looking to Danny for a tiebreaker, and he's like, I want to vote for Diablo. And I was like, all right.
And I already voted for StarCraft.
Yeah, so. We'll probably end up playing both Minecraft and StarCraft. And we'll get to the same time? No.
That would make for some really interesting conversations.
Oh my God.
And probably some pretty bad frame rates.
How would you get the SCVs to work?
My APM is -4. What does that even mean?
Oh my God. Okay, so we'll probably get a chance to play all these games in the future, but we're looking to see what people are saying for us. But okay, let's get right into the town. Let's talk about our favorite
model. One question for StarCraft. Is it going to be original StarCraft?
No.
Or like StarCraft
2?
And okay.
It'll be fucking...
Because it'd be hilarious if you were like, original StarCraft done?
It'll be the fucking Heart of the Swarm bullshit.
Oh, okay. That's not...
You know,
that's
the whole, like, we gave you some more units and a bullshit campaign that sucks. Oh, every review I've looked at, they're just like, oh, yeah, you know how StarCraft 2 had, like, kind of that cool campaign system where you were on the ship?
Yeah.
And it felt very, you know, very real, and it was in the setting. They just skinned it, and it looks terrible. Fucking terrible.
Yeah, but I watched the StarCraft 2 movie, all the cinematics for both of them online, mm-hmm. and it looks amazing. Like, just the cinematics look amazing. I don't even want to play the game.
But that's all...
I already know the story.
That's all Blizzard does well anymore, is half-assed cinematics. All right, so... Let's talk about what our favorite model for the Tau range was. Nathan and I talked about the model that we hated the most, which was DJ Longstrike, in the last episode. But what's your favorite model of this new release, in this new range? We'll start with Danny, because you kind of disagreed with me earlier when we were talking about the game before. So what's your viewpoint on that?
It's definitely a bit of a tough call. There's some new models that are really sweet. I still love a lot of the Forge World stuff as well, but I'm probably just going to go with the Riptide. I mean... You can pose the crap out of it. You can build it any way you want. It's huge. It looks like a boss. What can I say?
I like the Riptide, and I particularly like the kneeling stance of the Riptide because,
yes.
you know, model
yes.
for advantage, right? But really, I think it's the broadside suits are the ones that stand out for me. I really like the way that they're built. I like how much stockier they look. I love the missile version of them. I'm not a huge fan of the guitar railgun, but... it's still better than the shoulder railguns from the previous versions.
The shoulder ones were insane. You had to wrist mount them.
Oh, they were fucking terrible.
No, the shoulder railguns were my favorite pose, actually. I think that was my favorite model in the old range, was the old metal shoulder pulled broadside. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I had 9 of them, but...
No bias there.
Just talk yourself into that.
Yeah, but no, I like the old school broadsides, but I have to say the Riptide, like Danny, is my favorite too. Just because I look at that model and I look at the kneeling pose, and there's just so many ways I can make the model look good. I've seen a lot of them online. They kind of look very static, but I'm not going to like pose mine like that. There's going to be a lot of very like anime, like
climbing up on buildings and
jumping. Like arms out, stuff like that. Just like really like ridiculous looking stuff, but
just
I think they're going
to
look
take all
good
your
stuff.
Extra bits and give it Gundam wings.
Just to guarantee that you can never fit it in a figure case.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. We talked about that last with the episode with Terry as well. All right, so I know that Nathan agrees with me in terms of the broadside, so I think, but between the two, I think it's give or take. You can be happy with both. Definitely the Riptide stands out as being a well-built model. Mm-hmm. I got a chance to take a look at the plastic kit for it, and it is actually a really well-built plastic kit. It looks like it gives you more than enough options, and it's actually one of those things where it hides the mold lines really well, and, you know, everyone I've talked to who's actually purchased one and started building it has been very happy with it.
Well, I think it's one of those things that finally GW did where you heard the rumors, and you're like, you heard the rumors for years already, that you're coming out with an Uber suit, and you're like, if they do this right, it's going to be awesome. And then you just expect it for the last little while it's going to be bad, and it actually came out, and you're like, no, this is actually a good kit for once that actually lives up to the hype. So I think it's one of the few kits that lives up to the hype, because you heard about the Dread Knight. You're like, oh, Dread Knight, this sounds amazing. And then you saw him coming, you're like, holy crap. So if the Uber suit even comes close to looking like this, you're just like, ugh. The execution could not have been there. But no, they executed that model really well. But the missile sides are amazing looking models too.
Yeah.
The missile sides are good.
Mixed feelings, but whatever.
Well, talk about it. We're on a podcast. Don't tease.
People
bitch.
Actually want to hear opinions
Don't
on the
tease.
Internet. Is
yes.
that a thing? But, so I don't know. My main beef with it is I like the fact that it's bigger. They're supposed to be bigger. They had better saves, better toughness in the old book. I don't know if they're still toughness 5.
But, they are toughness yeah. five, yeah.
So they're supposed to be bigger and more impressive and reinforced. And, you know, the old one, if it took a shot, its ankles would just shatter into a million pieces, right? Like, it didn't make
sense.
Well,
even the Riptide's ankles are pretty slim.
But, yeah, so it's definitely bigger. It's bulkier. I mean, it's better than the old one for sure, but I just don't think it lives up to the Riptide. Like, that's a tough standard. I mean, all my regular battle suits that I had back in the day were Forge World. So I had Forge World Uber suits that were pretty awesome. And, I mean, it's hard to live up to those standards.
The Forge World suits that look really sleek, that have, like, the crazy railguns on the bottoms, that like those things, I think those are the V91s.
They're XV88-2, I think.
Fucking nerds.
Or do you mean the
XV9-04?
Yeah, the XV9-04s are amazing looking.
Klingon Trekkies in front of me right
it's,
here.
It's not like I spend all day at work looking
towies.
At Forge World.
You guys are Towies.
They look like old school Armored Core suits that you'd have on like the Armored Core games, which was amazing. Those ones look really good.
They did look more like Armored Core, which I do have to give them credit for. Yeah. I think we all played Armored Core.
I don't even know what that means, but
God
let's just
damn
move
it,
on.
Danny.
How are you a Tau player? You don't know what Armored Core is?
This is embarrassing. All right, so we're going to be talking about list building here. We're going to be talking about tournaments and some of the things that we've seen over the last few weeks here. We've had more than a few people posting stuff like fuck Tau, so on and so forth. Supporting
so book
Fire.
Is good.
Supporting Fire Breaks the Game. Well, I said, one of the things I said last episode was, you know, give it a week. You know, you're going to have a full week of people whining, complaining, and bitching about the Tau, and then everyone's going to kind of settle into it, and it's going to be fine. But, I mean, they're right up there with Dark Angels. They're right up there with any of the codexes that we had released
The Demon Codex wasn't Fuck Demons, and it's not a bad codex, just no one knows.
Nobody knows what it makes. It doesn't make sense when you first read it.
Yeah.
Everything's different.
Yeah, you read the Demon Codex, and you're like, I don't even know how this is going to be good. You read the Tau Codex, and you're like, okay, I understand what's good. Fuck Tau. Fuck this. Fucking bullshit. But
you know
Tau been
to
taking
hate.
It for so long, so it's fine.
You know what to hate with the Tau.
But before we get into that, let's actually stop and talk a little bit about just kind of your overall view of the book. You know, how you feel the book is written. Obviously, one of the things I want to talk about before we talk about list building is the FAQ. The FAQ is a very weird thing. Like, they didn't fix the pulse bombs. The fact
what
that, like,
pulse bombs?
What pulse bombs? Pulse bombs don't exist. If you happen to find one on the battlefield, you can reload it. But that's kind of the thing, right? Like, what we got was a weird FAQ that didn't really make sense because it wasn't something that broke the game, like the missile drone spam.
I don't know. That's debatable.
Well, okay, because if you did a full-on spam list at about 1,700, you had a total of 10 missile drones.
It depends on the build. You can take suits so cheap, just stick a missile pod on them. They already have the multi-tracker to toss on a third gun or whatever. If you could take them in all your slots, there were people online that were putting dozens of them into every list, and it was going to get out of control pretty quickly.
Well, it's been the best weapon in the Tau Codex since 3rd edition. Like, people have been putting missile pods on their crisis suits for a long time.
Well, it was always
the
backup.
12-point toughness 4 autocannon.
Yeah.
It was the best unit. It was the best gun in the Tau Codex in 3rd edition, it was the best in 4th edition, and it's the best in 6th edition. It's just what happens.
I think the frustrating part of it for me was the fact that you still have Fire Warriors with no weapon options, right? It's either pulse carbines or pulse rifles, and you didn't get any sort of heavy weapon. So I felt like, you know, giving them the opportunity to just take 2 missile pods, you know, was a smart move. I think that them saying that only broadsides can take missile pods as upgrades is fine, but really, you could have just said, listen, only ethereals, only battles, you know, like...
They could have said no Tau Firewares, they could have said anything.
Exactly. Like,
broadsides only is kind of random.
Broadsides only is really random, considering the fact that you already know that people are going to be buying broadsides considering the new models, right? So, obviously, they're just trying to continue to sell those new models.
I think it comes down to the point of, and this has been the Tau design philosophy from the design studio, and this is personally what I think, but it's X to Y. It's the Fire Warrior shoot at troops, your suits deal with tanks and heavier stuff, and then your specialty stuff deals with their specialty stuff. It's always one-to-one. There's no mixing of, like, there's no space ringing it up where you're like, space rings can handle everything in one squad. It's squad versus squad. One thing is supposed to take on one thing across the table from it.
Well, and again, okay, I get that. I'm not saying that you're wrong in that particular aspect, but I think that it doesn't necessarily follow the fluff, and it doesn't necessarily follow the builds that we're seeing for 6th edition so far to have these units that come into the game in the troop slot that are so one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And I like Fire Warriors, and again, Fire Warriors are, well, you pointed out, not the only troop slot that have a strength five weapon. They are the only troop slot that has a 30-inch range strength five weapon that can be boosted up to...
Oh, random noises in the background.
I don't know what that was. Whose phone was that?
It sounded epic, like there was going to be some Charge of the Rohirrim or something.
It was a 20th Century Fox intro, actually.
It was something weird. I guess my cat's fucking around back there. I don't know what's going on. But yeah, like I just feel like, you know, something extra in there could have been really useful for Fire Warriors, especially considering the fact that they've basically made it so that there's really no reason to take Kroot. Now, you disagree with this, and I know that you disagree
snipers,
with this.
Snipers, I don't know. It's...
I know that you disagree with this, but I want to talk about Kroot before we talk about list building as well, because that's the other point of contention so far with people who are playing with Tau armies, not necessarily against Tau armies, because I think most people, if they see a big unit of Kroot on the table, are pretty happy, you know, that you decided to take that unit. Danny, you said something interesting on the Facebook page about Kroot and sniper rifles and kind of what you felt like their role was in the Tau army.
I wish I could remember what I said on the Facebook page, because it sounded pretty good the way you introduced it there. But I think at the end of the day, the main thing is they're super cheap. When they're sniping, they have precision shots and rending and all that good stuff. So I've seen a couple of battle reports online, and in virtually every battle report, it seems like the Kroot snipers for like 90 points or whatever it is, they're picking off like missile launchers, they're picking off sergeants all on first turn, and for dirt cheap. I mean, they're cheap infiltrating, scoring, outflanking. They can take acute senses if you buy a single like 5-point Kroot Hound. They can outflank with Kroot guns, which are the Krootox guns, which are like autocannons again, rapid fire. I mean, there's nothing bad about it. They're cheap, and I mean, let's face it, if you have a battle force, you have 20 of them, you might as well put them in the army and save yourself $100.
I think when I was always a purist for never running Kroot in your Tau armies. Like, I hated Kroot when they were good, but but I've been talking to Bo, actually, over text, and he has actually convinced me that a squad of Kroot is a good buy if you take 5 Fire Warrior teams and a squad of Kroot. Take 15-20 Kroot with 10 Kroot Hounds, or just taking a couple Kroot Oxes, depending on what you want your flavor of the week to be.
Yeah.
With snipers, with the volume of fire you're getting, you're able to get important things out of units, being the missile launcher, being the las cannon. You can shoot Devastator squads and pick off 2 missile launchers, and that makes pretty much that squad useless. You can get around extra wounds to just be a little bit of a harassment unit, and if you're shoving them in a forest halfway up the table, it's not a bad thing, because people are going to shoot at them and then be like, oh, well, I'm dumping all this fire into a unit that's not really that important to what I need to do against it. But even if you assault it and they got 5 or 6 Kroot Hounds in it, the squad can still fight in combat. Or if it's got the autocannons and it's still tank hunting, it's still killing a couple rhinos a game if you're ignoring it.
Like, if you're outflanking and first turn you're shooting at side armor of a couple of transports for like 100 points, that's not bad. That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think anybody's really saying that they're Yetis, right? Like, it's nobody's saying that.
They're just their thing in the list now is different. They used to be just take 2 units, 2 full squads of them, and assault them at the table, and they would harass, wherever they come out from. Right now, their use in the army is a little different.
That's fair,
and that's just what has to happen.
Well,
right?
And that's part of the thing that I really have a problem with the Kroot, and this is where the argument comes in the other direction, is that what you're getting in the Kroot is really turn one type stuff, and it's turn one type stuff in the sense that, you know, getting them, putting them on the table, using them for the advantages that they're giving you is good. But there's no long-term vision in Kroot. Kind of once you get past turn one. Well, okay, sure, but is that going to fit in with the role of the rest of your army?
If it's to the point where you're outflanking onto a flank with some objectives and with acute senses, you're going to land where you want to like 89% of the time, whatever the math is. And I don't know. I made that up. I can't remember the rules. But I think it's good numbers. Anyway, so yeah, they outflank. They land where they want. And if you refuse flank or whatever on one side, stick like 20 Kroot, a bunch of Kroot Ox on the other side, divert a chunk of the enemy army for a couple turns, that's clutch.
I think infiltrating them on an objective piece in where they need to be to make someone have to divert a little bit of their army there has totally paid for their points, because there's no way they're diverting a unit that isn't more points than a crew unit to this objective point.
It's pretty hard to have a unit less.
Yes, there's nothing wrong with taking in the one objective, and there's nothing wrong with getting into a position that works for you having the mobility. But, you know, like you do have other options in the list to do the same thing. But the biggest argument is, you know, when you start talking about what they're doing past turn two, Fire Warriors are going to surpass them. You're going to want the strength five shots later in the game. Yeah, you're not going to have as many accurate, you know, like sniping shots. You're not going to maybe have as much rending or anything along those lines. But, you know, the stuff that you would be shooting at with rending, you're still going to be shooting at with your strength five pulse rifle. And it balances itself out, but in the late game, it's going to work a lot better for you to have the Fire Warriors because of the supporting fire. Because of the fact that they're going to work with what you currently are using, they're going to work with the overall strategy of the list, as opposed to having the list working one way and this one unit off doing its own shit.
That's, ironically, that's one of the things I like about them, is they can use ethereal boosts, they can use characters joining them.
But they're never
going
to be by your ethereal, according to what you were saying before.
But the main thing is, like,
stop contradicting yourself, asshat.
They can use all that stuff if they get the opportunity, fine. Like, they can, if they're within range, that's a bonus. But
I think
they're one of the units that can actually operate relatively independently for cheap and do a job without using all your marker light hits, without just taking a lot of the support elements.
I think that's
of your
a good point.
They're actually independent.
The point of the marker lights.
I think they can use them
if they need to.
I think they're a true distracting throwaway unit in an army that can honestly, with how cheap everything is in this list, you can get away with having a cheap throwaway unit in your list.
So many armies are desperate for cheap scoring, and it's pretty crazy to see people that have it as an option ignore it.
Yeah.
Like, if a Space Marine player could take a 6 or 7 point model that was actually not shit, they'd do it in a second.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I think my issue with it, obviously, is the fluff difference here, where
they were
a close combat carnivore unit. You know, I mean, it's very frustrating for me to see the crew go the direction that they've gone because, well, one of the things that Nathan had said, and I'll paraphrase what he had said in an email to me sometime this week, was that could you imagine crew the way that they were in the current list? Because they really would counterbalance so heavily in one direction because of the fact that you could use them to stop units up, and then supporting fire would basically fuck whatever was left.
That's what I was thinking when I first read it, too.
But one of the issues that I have with it is there's better ways to balance it than what they did.
Like,
you could have
points
gone,
costs, for example.
Well, you could have made their weapons last guns, right?
Yeah.
Like, why their weapons are AP6 bolters is beyond me.
Because they use Tau Advanced Black Powder or whatever the hell their weird rule is. They gave
them extra powered cartridges. It was in the fluff.
Sure. Well, the other thing about it is a pointy piece of metal is AP5 for some fucking reason.
Yeah, I don't quite understand why Kroot rifles are AP5.
It's so fucking stupid.
And why they're specifically two-handed weapons when they don't have two close combat weapons. What does that accomplish?
Making them strength...
What accomplishes getting an attack out of their profile.
Making them strength 3 was whatever, but I think they should have kept the two attacks. That was when they should have kept was two attacks.
Well, they've turned them into a shooting unit, and it's such a weird change that you do have to get this impression that Games Workshop does not want you to buy Kroot. And that's really the way that I take this on, because we'll both agree a 10-man unit is about as far as you're going to go with one Kroot hound, right?
I was thinking, if you're going to take Kroot, I was thinking like a couple of Kroot Ox, if you can stomach the ridiculous dollar cost of them, you can't go wrong. Like, spend 150 points on them.
Do they lose the infiltrate with the Kroot Ox?
Not anymore. They can still infiltrate with the autocannon dudes.
I would take 15 Kroot with the sniper rounds with 6 Kroot hounds.
What about Kroot Ox?
If I was going to do some more shooting and I could fit it, I'd take the Kroot Ox. If I was just kind of looking for something just to harass and hopefully something assaults me, I'm on an objective.
No, I agree with Danny here. I think that the Kroot Hounds are an upgrade. You take one Kroot Hound for acute senses, and then
and
you're
one
done.
Guy's initiative 5 for or whatever it is, sweeping advance. You have one guy initiative 5, that's all you need. Just put him in the back, don't allocate a wound to him, you're good.
Okay, that's the way it is. All right, I don't want to spend too much time on Kroot.
Let's just spend the full hour. I mean, why not?
I initially started talking about
everybody
this,
loves Kroot.
But what's your overall impression of the list? We'll start with Matt.
Mm.
The overall impression of the Codex. I'm sorry.
The overall impression of Bud Light Lime or Bud Light Platinum.
No, we're not. We're,
oh, we're not.
We're not talking about anymore. Bud Light Lime or Clit.
Overall impression of the book, and the first thing I've sent to like probably 3 people have asked me, it's cheap. Everything in this book is so cheap. Like, I made my dream list and fit everything in and an extra squad. in 1850. And I was like,
that's impressive. That never happens.
I was like, what? I was like, I fit everything I wanted in this army. Because when I first read, when I first heard about the list and I heard about everything, I was like, I want to take three Riptides. I want to take Oshova. I want to take a broadside team. I want to take two Hammerheads. And I want to take three Fire Warrior teams. And after I built that, I could still fit in a bodyguard and a Fire Warrior team into 1850. And I was like, holy fuck, this is good. This is cheap. Well, like, everything's so cheap.
It was very similar to, like, Demons, where, you know, you looked at the point cost for Demons, and you knew that with 6th edition that their points had to come down, that things had to clean up.
Yeah.
You know, and we saw that happen for 40K, and even for, not necessarily for fantasy in every situation, but in a lot of cases, things went down, like Demon Princes, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with the Tau, we basically got what we all expected. A couple of points down in every situation, and a couple of new units that were high points value that would counterbalance the opportunity of people to just play what Nathan would play, which would basically be 72 Fire Warriors, right? Like, it's those types of lists that you're going to have to deal with, that you're going to have to play against, that you're going to have to try to counterbalance. But, you know, I think that they were very smart in the way that they built the Codex to allow you to take what you wanted to take, but also stay true to the core that you already had in your book. You know, one of the things we talked about was that there were these old school Tau players, you know, Matt, you're one of them, that you never get rid of your Tau army, right? Like, that Tau army is sitting in a closet.
Exactly, the perfect closet army.
I had the box. I bought the first box when it first came out, when it first was released, like the mega, like, $350 box with the Codex in it. I was like the second person in Kingsway to buy that box.
Yep.
And I had it, and I sold it 2 years ago, because I just remember looking at my broadsides, all nine of them, just being like, holy, why are they all in these fucking pieces?
Yeah.
Because it was like $450 worth of models. And I was like, and some guy offered me like a whole Chaos army for it. And I was like, take them. I was like, you have fun repairing all these models every tournament.
Yeah. I'm not one for maintenance. I can't handle that.
Yeah, so, no.
I paint it once and if it breaks, just, oh well, I don't get to use
it. And that was the Tau army. I was like, I remember like coming to Kingsway on Thursday nights back in the day and just literally gluing my broadsides at the table. Just being like,
I remember never losing to that army.
Those are probably the days before Accelerator, so it'd take like five minutes with a glue every time.
Where you were basically like creating that little Eiffel Tower of fingers to hold your Talos together. You're just like, okay, just if I can hold this position for roughly 35 seconds, my Talos will actually stay where it needs to
stay. Somebody scratch my nose, please, God.
Danny, what's your impressions of the book overall?
Overall, I really like it. I mean, one of my favorite things about the list is the tightness of the language, like, 9 times out of 10 in the list, is pretty unparalleled. Like, a lot of the shooting abilities, it says, only works in the shooting phase. So, like, it won't work for Overwatch kind of a thing. Like, they were really specific for a lot of things. That's my overall impression for the most part, is they put a lot of thought into it. They've crossed more T's and dotted more I's than usual, with the exception of bombers that don't have bombs and have no way of buying bombs. But, overall, I mean, it's tight. I haven't looked at the rules and shook my head very much, and yeah, you can build the list 10 different ways if you want to and still have points left over. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. I think the bomber conversation is a funny one because that's definitely a gamer argument, right? Where even Games Workshop is looking at people going like, it fucking has bombs. Like, no, we're not going to put it into the FAQ. Grow the fuck up. It has bombs. And I don't think anybody ever playing against a Tau player who takes that vehicle is going to be like, oh no, you don't have bombs.
I don't know. Having more strength 5 AP 5 in the army is going to just bust that army list wide open. So right. I can see why these people, I can see why these people are so upset.
Like, and everybody,
they don't, oh no, not more strength 5.
Well, I like the vehicle as a whole, but it's still one of those things where, like, I might take one if I have the points.
Yeah.
Speaking of having the points, let's actually talk about building some Tau lists now. Maddie, you'd actually built 2 lists here, so I want to start with you. You had built a list that you would like to play in, a list that you feel like is the tournament pro list. Go through the tournament pro list first and then talk about the list that you'd like to play.
Okay, so the list I have for the tournament pro list is kind of just, I believe this breaks down to like 1450, and then you can kind of like add your toys on where it is. But I think any strong list is going to start in the heavy support section for Tau, like it always has been. And I think taking a Hammerhead with the smart missile system and the thing that gives it stealth, I can't remember, I think it's decoy or whatever. Whatever gives it stealth.
So you Disruption pod.
Disruption pod. And the good thing about it, the Hammerheads and the Skyraids, you can model for
advantage.
You can model for advantage by having it on the actual floating device and then have like the Hammerhead like go over a bunker, and then you're getting like a 3+, 4+, depending on where you are. You have that for 145 points. You have a Skyray for 130 because you're getting the cheap missile locks in. And yep. you're having the, I'm just calling them missile sides. If you can't figure out what missile side is, it's the broadsides with the missiles. But for my broadside squad with missiles, I'm also taking two with the Skyfire, and I'm taking one with target lock. Meaning that two of them can hammer a flyer out where I need to, and then one can target lock to another flyer if I need to get, if I want to like be cheesy, or I can get support fire another unit with all that firepower.
How
or
is
just
that cheesy?
No, I'm not saying, I'm not saying, whatever.
I was just like, one model doing one thing is cheesy? Yeah, I did.
Well, no, if I felt like shooting two flyers at the same time and kind of like just using my twin link to get it out. One of them has target lock, the other two have velocity. So okay. the squad fires at the flyer, but the other guy fires away
he
from the squad.
He gets to change.
Oh, okay.
He gets to fire separately because
so
of the
target. I thought you meant interceptor, and I was like, how's he intercepting? No. Okay, we got it.
So that's
shut up, asshole.
And so for the bargain basement price, I'm pretty sure that's 250, 130, 145. That's about 600. It's about 600 points, 550, 600 points. That's your heavy support section. Every Tau army is probably going to use something close to that. That's a great way to cover all your bases. Heavy tanks, heavy flyers, and the broadsides can still shoot troops and do a very good job.
Your hammerhead was railgun, submunition?
Always railgun submunition.
Okay, cool. Just making sure.
And then you have four teams of fire warriors, 118 points each. You have Dark Strider and a unit of Pathfinders. The reason I like Dark Strider and a unit of Pathfinders, and I'm also taking with the unit of Pathfinders the Particle Accelerator. Your dog wants to get let in.
You guys just keep talking.
Okay. With the Particle Accelerator, the Pathfinder's Pulse Carbines are getting extra 6 inches. And I'm taking a full 10-man unit with the Marker Lights. What I'm doing what I'm doing with that is, I think Darkstrider, because he has a great special role where he can overwatch then run away.
That is pretty huge.
I was thinking
that's run away before they get to actually finish their charge.
Exactly.
Mode, right?
So I was thinking of either putting him in front and having the Fire Warriors behind him, or going Fire War unit, him, 3 Fire War units, and then going the Fire War unit. The first Fire War unit is to get shot up and give them extra cover saves because they have the greater cover save, and also for them to if that unit gets assaulted, they can still overwatch support fire and then run away, because they're allowed to consolidate after overwatch.
And what's his nut? Darkstrider?
Yeah, Darkstrider. That's what he does.
Is his minus one enemy toughness thing, is that in all phases or in the shooting phase only? How does that thing work?
I didn't look at that one. I was more just worried about the running away one. But for the last part of the army, I'm not going to argue stealth suits are great, but a 6-man stealth suit unit with just burst cannons flying around there. That's 1470. That's
I think
a great
one of
list.
Those is a must.
That's a great list to start with. At 1700 or 1850, you can add in whatever toys you want after that. Crisis suits, Crisis Commander,
whatever.
Whatever you want to do. But I think for a tournament list, that's a great 1500 list plus whatever you want to take.
All right. So one of the interesting things that you'd actually brought up was that you really feel that the Tau Codex starts in the heavy support slot.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people that I've talked to have been actually going the other direction in terms of the Tau. Ooh, I burped. The Tau army list starts with the HQ and troops choice.
Mm.
In the sense that the Ethereal Cadre Fireblade or the mix of a Crisis Battlesuit Commander, you know, is the way to go, and you build around that, and you do this, that, and the other thing. You take the Battlesuit Commander, you put them with the missile sides, you know, so on and so forth. Things of that nature. I mean, what I built was actually very similar to what you built as well. You know, I think the Skyray is a must. I think the stealth suits are a must. I think that the missile sides are a must. And when you actually look at those things, they're the things that really stand out. And I find myself in a very hard position where I look at the other half of the list being Ethereal, Cadre, Fireblade, and Fire Warriors. Like, I don't feel like Crisis Suits really fall into the list for me too much. I don't feel like the Riptide falls into the list for me too much. Yeah, really. I mean, it's just, I feel like your points are better spent in other directions, considering the fact that even though it is a monstrous creature, and it can help you a little bit in the combat phase if need be.
Oh, that's definitely like plan D.
Well, and that's exactly
it.
It
only
right?
has 3 attacks. It's like, it's not even that good.
It's the opposite of my orcs. Sorry, I slammed my chair into the table. It's the opposite of my orcs, right? Where it's just like, oh, if I just don't get into combat, I call that a loss, right? Whereas the other way around with the Tau, if you get into combat, you just call that a loss, right? But I just don't feel like they're all that necessary. So, you know, I got 2 to 3 units of Fire Warriors. I got a unit of Pathfinders because I really feel like they work really well.
Yeah,
Marker Lights just make everything better.
Yeah. And that's exactly it, right? Like, they work so well with the Marker Lights, and the Devilfish is still a great tank to have on the table. The Hammerhead, yes. The Sky Ray, yes. You know, the Stealth Suits, yes. The Missile Sides, yes. But I think the Ethereal and Cadre Fireblade is what rounds that list out the best. Yeah. And that's where my list differentiates from yours, stick to Ethereal, Cadre Fireblade to make use of my troops' choice as much as possible.
I like Darkstrider for with the Pathfinders, just so he can do those little, like, tweaky little tricks. But adding a Cadre Fireblade or an Ethereal... I'd add Unshi, even though Unshi's the worst Ethereal. Just because I love
running even on.
I used to use Unshi like in third edition, which was hilarious. I had him with like lightsabers actually on his like things. He was Darth Unshi. I know it was pretty bad. But
wow. Says the guy with Master Chaplain and Anubis.
Yeah. So but
with six wings.
But having an Ethereal in this list, like I said, it's only 1475 for like what I just went through. Adding an Ethereal or adding Conjure Fireblade. Switching out Darkstrider, he's not a must. I just personally liked him the best for what this list is doing. Any of those from a starting base and then adding whatever your toys are is a great
start. Now, here's what's interesting. Because of everything that you've just said about Kroot, there's no Kroot in either of these lists.
Kroot is something you'd add into a higher point game. I don't think you take Kroot in a lower point game.
All right. Danny, talk a little bit about your list, kind of the things that you've done.
Well, I just picked up my book the other day, so I haven't had too much time to, you know, crunch numbers and make up lists. But I have what, according to my, you know, chicken scratch notes here, approximately 1,000 points for, you know, a good starting place for where I'd want to start an army. And basically, for me, I started with the troops. Like, I can't help it. It's an old habit. It's an old rule of thumb kind of thing.
I'm the same way.
So what I was thinking was 2 units of 12 stay-at-home Fire Warriors. You know, stay around your deployment zone. Lay into shit, support fire each other, cover single each other's
mothers.
Bases.
Single mothers.
Yeah. And
single mother fire warriors.
I think this, just going on that, I think running this codex in pairs is a great strategy.
Not only does it look good on a tournament display board, to have everything nice and symmetrical, parade formation as it's known. But
see, now I'm one of those nerds where everything I do is symmetrical, even if it might lose me a fight. I'm just like, no. You can't just have one. You can't have an odd-numbered unit. It all has to be symmetrical. I'm one of those guys who doesn't take a unit of 50 skeletons. I take a unit of 49 skeletons because there's a character coming in it. I can't stand that shit. It drives me crazy. I have to do it.
The OCD.
Yes, I can't help it.
But, yeah, so that's what I was thinking in the beginning was 12 Fire Warriors, 2 units. I mean, it's cheap. It's effective. They'll camp your objectives and do a decent job for you. A third unit of Fire Warriors, where I was actually thinking carbines in a Devilfish.
Mm-hmm.
With carbines being assault 2 now,
yep.
Like in a Devilfish where you're not firing at 30 inches because, well, you're in a fucking tank,
yep.
It just seems to make the most sense, right? Where you can move up, grab a midfield objective, lay down some fire, maybe cause some pinning, and the Devilfish at that point can run off and get in people's faces, get in the way. And that seems to be a decent choice for like a midfield objective, hope for the best kind of a situation.
Well, and the pulse accelerator with them is also quite nice.
Isn't that Pathfinders only?
Well, I thought you were talking about Pathfinders.
Sorry, no, that was a third unit of Fire Warriors, 8 just 8 in a Devilfish, nice cheap scoring.
My Pathfinders had particle accelerator.
Damn it.
And I actually did take a unit of Kroot in this army list that I was, again, scrawling desperately 10 minutes before we started this thing.
15 Kroot, 2 so, Hounds, 3 Ox. Yeah, and that's...
And sniper ammo as well, because that's pretty much a given, right? But, so it's that total, it's 20 models, it's 190 points, and I mean, compared to my Space Marine armies, where if 190 points gets me 10 models, like, I'm fucking laughing.
You're right.
So, you know, 20 guys...
Well, you're cutting points against 190 10 models. Like, you're hoping this is good.
Oh, God, like, right. I was painting Stern Guard lately, where it's just like, this unit costs 400 points. Like, what am I doing? But, yeah, so anyway, it's 190 points. They can multitask, they can rapid fire their guns, or they can shoot their sniper ammo. They have crude ox, strength 7. Like, they're just a decent throwaway, whatever you need it to do kind of a unit. And obviously 6 obligatory Pathfinders, because you cannot go wrong with Pathfinders, whether it's, you know, you're taking 4 or taking 30, whatever. As long as you have enough guns to benefit from the marker lights, you should have those marker lights, in my opinion. And,
with the Pathfinders, I mean, we've talked about them a little bit here, and Nathan's viewpoint on it is there's really no reason to upgrade them to any sort of special weapons like the ion rifles or the rail rifles.
You lose the marker light.
Yeah. No, you don't lose the marker light anymore.
You don't?
Nope.
Whoa!
You can still take the marker light.
The marker light's a separate piece of wargear now.
It's the points and what you do with it, right? Because again, like you get to always upgrade your Shazui. It's a Shazui Klingons.
It's a ShamWow.
You get to upgrade all of your ShamWow with the marker light and target lock.
So you can soak up all your hooker blood in record time.
That's right. but yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very much an issue of making sure that you're using the squad effectively. But really, I feel like two ion rifles is not a bad choice for those squads if you have the extra, 30 or 40 points for the upgrades?
I'm on the page. Let's see.
I actually like the rail rifles because they're rapid fire.
Yep.
Strength 6, AP 1, rapid fire?
Yep.
Iron rifles 10, rail rifles 15. That's not bad.
I don't worry too much about the rail rifles. Really, what I'm looking for is the ion rifles with the overcharge.
Yeah, being able to boost to strength 8 and fire a template or rapid fire at 7. Like, you got options.
Yeah, and that's really the nice thing. Now, we haven't talked too much about flyers. I don't think either of you had flyers in your list. I actually had gone ahead.
Unless I can take a Barracuda, because the Barracuda is amazing.
It's cheap. I like it. It's pretty.
I love the old Barracuda. The Barracuda's made. Unless we're talking about Mantas. Can I take a Manta?
No, nobody's going to take a Manta.
I'm pretty sure they're only 2,000 points, so you can totally fit it in tournament list. That's no problem.
I took a Razor Shark because I really do like the build for it. I like the quad ion turret when you overcharge it. I think that it's actually a good flyer for 145 points. But again, it is one of those things that it's the first to cut, right? 1850, it's definitely in there, but it's the first to cut as soon as you start going down. I just feel like you do want to have a flyer on the table.
Well, in the 6th edition,
that
having,
level of support
having
is helpful
a flyer
for
to Top Gun another flyer is never a bad thing. Like,
well, no, you've got a Sky Ray on the table. You don't need to worry about Top Gunning.
Okay, well, adding a flyer to any list is not a bad thing. And the quad charge ion turrets are pretty good.
I haven't had a chance to look it up. That's the question I was meaning to ask. Like, what exactly does a quad ion cannon do overcharge
it? It's a standard weapon. So quad ion turret standard is 30 inches, strength 7, AP 4, heavy 4. Overcharge is strength 8, AP 4, heavy 1, gets hot, large blast.
Large blast. Yeah. Okay, that's the big difference between it and the little dinky.
Yeah, like the gets hot can kind of, you know, you take a hull point, but you got 3 hull points anyway, so it's not that big of a deal. You know, maybe you take a hull point.
And you only take
a
hull point on a 4+, too, right?
Correct.
Like, it's a 50-50. It's not terrible. It's not the end of the world if you do.
Exactly, right? But I think having the large blast, I think having the missile pods on it, I think having all the upgrades on it, and then you go ahead and you put the flechette defense on it, or not the flechette, what's the other one?
Decoy launchers.
The decoy launchers,
defense.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's really, really good, because it basically throws out all the bullshit from, you know, having the auto, the quad turrets.
Like,
you know,
my contemptor that I got downstairs?
Exactly. It makes it a very well defensible flyer that can do some work on the table, and
survivable.
At strength 8, it's good, it's survivable, and 145 points is cheap. So, I mean, that's the one where I actually say,
you build a strong 1,700 point list and add that to 1850.
Well, like I said before, I think that it's the first thing to go, but I take it as opposed to that crew unit that you put on the table there, Danny, at 190 points. Because I think at 145 points, it's doing as much as the crew. It's got so much versatility. I think that it's also going to be one of those things that's a boogeyman. It's a boogeyman. People are going to try to shoot it down, but you could care less if it gets shot down.
People just fucking panic when they see a flyer.
Oh, yeah,
they do.
Sure. Flyers are weird scary in this edition. People think they're going to do so much damage, and they're like shooting a melted gun in a las cannon. You're like, oh, well, that's awesome.
And it has nacelles.
Unless it's a hell chicken or something like that. Some flyers are scary, but...
well, you know, doom sides. All right, so one of the things that we really kind of didn't talk too much about is crisis teams. Because I said this in the last podcast, I don't think that the crisis teams really fit unless you're playing a really super aggressive type Tau list that's going to be getting in people's faces and trying for short range combat. The problem with that is that if you're going to be playing those types of lists, you're going to be avoiding Fire Warriors. You're going to be focusing more on Pathfinders, or you might going to be taking Fire Warriors with Devilfish with Pulse Carbines and playing that type of game. What do you guys think the viability of Fire Warriors, Pulse Carbines, Devilfish as your high mobility, high short range combat type list is going to be for tournaments.
I think it's a good idea, but I don't think having. Well, first of all, I think crisis teams should be regulated just to bodyguards. I don't think taking a crisis team in the elite slot.
It's hard to give up that slot.
It's hard to give up that slot, right?
Give me a beer.
Oh, a beer. Okay.
Yeah, I'm done.
I was wondering what that little hand motion was for. I was kind of getting nervous, like something's going to start happening under the table.
No, that hand motion would happen under the table. No, I finished my whiskey. I'm on to beer.
No, I think crisis teams, and even in the old Tau Codex, I only ever took crisis teams as bodyguards. I never took them in the elite slot. They were always like, man, like, your elite slots are going to be too competitive between stealth teams and Riptides.
Riptides now are huge. That's hard to ignore.
Crisis teams are going to be in the bodyguard section. You take a Crisis Commander and a bodyguard, and you should be good to go. Or you take Oshova, and you just have a massive Crisis team. That's all you need, right?
Well, even if you take the Commander and you upgrade his suit and you toss him in the unit of broadsides and give him the one that allows you to get the rerolls. The system that gives you the rerolls.
The targeter, if you hold fire,
yeah,
you
yeah.
reroll.
Right, right. Where he just doesn't shoot, you just leave him with his normal ship, but he gets the toughness 5 with a 2+ save.
Yeah, the Iridium. Yeah.
Right, right. Like, it's. I think that that's actually really, really viable if you're taking that, you know, 3-man squad of broadsides and you really want them to work properly.
Don't broadsides reroll anyway?
Missile sides do. Missile sides have the rerolls pretty much all the time.
I think if you're going rail rifles, go crazy.
I thought the rifles still had the rerolls.
Rifles are still twin-linked.
So what on broadsides is not twin linked? What needs to reroll to hit?
The drones. If you load them up with drones,
missile drones.
Because you give him a squadron of missile drones and a drone control, and he'll take over all the drones in the squad, and then they're rerolling.
They get that ballistic.
Missile drones
as well.
Do not benefit from drone controllers. It's a specific list. It's marker drones and gun drones and that
well,
sort
then
of
I guess
thing.
We're just
that makes all sorts
so, yeah,
of
it's,
sense.
It's again, they just they
why would a drone
screw you, GW?
Why would a drone be affected by drone control?
I know it totally makes no sense. I mean, it's not like the name implies that it would happen, but no, it's one of those things where missile drones for about 24 hours, everybody was having like total nerdgasms over strength 7,
so
ballistic skill 5 with a chasso. Everyone was looking forward to that stuff, and they're a lot more limited, I think, than initially people expected. You can still marker light and benefit from your ballistic skill upgrades, but
so the other thing that actually plays very heavily into my list, I didn't actually get a chance to talk about it, is the full-size squad of gun drones with false carbines.
I thought you were looking at Vespids for a second. I was like, really, Vespids?
Neither of you guys talked about gun drones, but actually gun drones was one of the core. I actually looked at it as like a core choice.
Gun drones aren't a bad choice.
As opposed to that other unit of fire warriors, I went in with a unit of gun drones, which actually ends up being a total of 12. So 12 gun drones, that's the line that lines up behind my fire warriors. And they end up doing the supporting fire because they're twin-linked. They're twin-linked, right? And I think that that's a must as well. I forgot about it earlier in the show, but again, like that was another big part of my list because I think at the points cost, it works very well. I'm going to go ahead and talk about one of the things that Nathan talked about this week. He's not here, but I want to bring this into the show. He actually went really, really big on piranhas. Neither of you guys did that. Let's talk about piranhas a little bit.
They are very interesting.
The fact that you're able to, and Nathan said this, I wasn't sure about it, and I haven't checked the rules since, so I want you guys to verify. When you deploy your gun drones off of a piranha, they become a separate unit? Or does the new rules for gun drones?
No, they're a separate unit.
The second they detach, they're a second unit.
It says they detach like a squad disembarking.
Okay, perfect. So the big thing was, is as opposed to taking a squad of gun drones, it was actually taking squads of piranhas. Because,
and you just poop out free units.
Right, and that's exactly it.
And you said that in
24
the last podcast, right?
points for two gun drones.
Or 40 for a piranha?
Or 40 points for a piranha, which gives you the burst cannon or the fusion blasters, right? And again, fusion blasters have that additional range, which
18,
is really nice.
Yeah, that's huge.
And again, you dump them first turn, you put them in the back of your fire warrior squads for supporting fire, and then you just go ahead and you let your piranhas go around and tank hunt. And actually, that was the only reason why I didn't have a hammerhead in my list.
Oh,
because
that's
I didn't.
That's a good idea.
Feel like you needed it with the piranhas, with the Skyray, with everything else that you had out there on the table. I didn't think that it was appropriate.
In my dream list, the reason I took hammerheads is because I truly thought they were never going to get shot. I never thought they were going to get shot.
Like, people just won't bother because of the cover saves.
Well, and I'm taking 3 Riptides.
Those do attract a wee bit of attention.
Well, I want to talk about the Riptides because my list, I think I already said it. It's Oshova, 3 Riptides, 2 Hammerheads, a missile side team, and 4 units of 10 fire... 12 fire warriors? 12 fire warriors. And 2 bodyguards with Oshova. So Oshova goes around, does whatever he wants. The Riptides, I think they're great. I don't even know why you need to use Nova Reactor, because you take the Ion Excel, you take the Ion Cannon thing, you take the Ion Cannon thing, and you just use the Strength 8 AP2 Large Blast one. You don't even upgrade it to Strength 9.
If you want a Barrage Snipe, that's one of the main reasons, I think. If there's some dude that is like a banner,
there's really no way they're killing even, I even think, one Riptide, unless they're really pounding on one, that you're not going to get three Strength 8 AP2 Large Blasts on the table in the first turn.
Yeah, they're, what, 5 wounds, Toughness 6, 2+, 5+, you can boost for a 3+ invul.
Well, okay,
they are tough to bring
down. Let's talk about Overcharge. Let's talk about Overcharge, though, because, you know, we kind of touched on this in the past, but in the last episode, but really, I think Overcharge is one of the things you're going to do in a pinch. When you need that extra strength, when you need that extra hit, when you need that extra bonus.
When you need the 3+ invul, right. Like if somebody just going to drop and kill you.
Exactly. I think that's the only reason
you need
it
is for a 3+ invul. Because other than that, because you don't need to upgrade from a Strength 8 AP2 to a Strength 9 AP2. There's no reason.
I think that you could be in a situation where that could definitely play to your advantage if you're trying to stop people from countercharging.
Yeah.
In a pinch, or if you need to kill
a vehicle. Imagine there's a defiler trying to countercharge you and you want to guarantee that thing dead.
Because the overcharged ion accelerator is also, it's ordnance barrage. So it becomes a huge anti-tank, isn't it?
No,
isn't it ordnance barrage?
It's heavy one large blast.
I thought for sure. Okay, maybe
it's not the Nova charge. Barrage.
The Nova charge is an ordnance
barrage. Oh, okay. That's what I thought we meant. Yeah.
Amp up.
Sorry. Terminology fail.
See, that's what I'm saying. The ion accelerator,
And this is why I talked about the fact that you need to read the book 2 to 3 more times.
That's why I'm saying, like, for the Riptide, with paying the 5 extra points for the Ion, and then being able to have the 3 steps, but the second step is only just gets hot, and it's strength at AP2, you're pretty much able to deal with anything on the table. And then even then, you still have the Fusion Blaster, or the Plasma Gun, or the whatever you need.
Smart Missile, whatever you do.
And it's only 185 points. And I say only 185 points, but even then, for what that thing does across all the other Codex spectrums, for what it does and what it has, is pretty good. Because
you have to appreciate the versatility.
Because it's a monstrous creature. It's not a Vindicator. It has a pretty much as good as a Vindicator cannon, because it's AP2 Strength 8, only said 8 Strength and AP1. But it's pretty much a Vindicator, but it's moving around with 5 wounds and a 2+ save.
It's also not a Baby Bjorn.
Yes, and that too. Yeah, no, not fair. Fair enough. And the Baby Bjorn isn't even that good. Like, no. Its shooting guns are not that good.
I don't think anybody really takes the Baby Bjorn for that particular aspect of it. All right, so you've heard about the list that we've built in various random conversations.
Might have been hard to follow.
I will let you know that we started drinking about an hour and a half ago. I think that the big thing here that we have to stress so much with the Tau Codex is that the versatility that we're given that was not there in the last edition of this Codex is amazing. And I think that any Tau player is going to be extremely happy. And I think, you know, just the fact that
unless you had 100 crew.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Unless you had 100 crew.
But I think any Tau player who is looking at this book and had a list that they were playing in the prior Codex, in the prior edition, is going to be relatively happy with the fact that they don't feel, you know, confined to a specific playstyle. They don't feel like they have to throw away half of what they had before. I feel like people will be relatively happy. And we didn't see this with Dark Angels. We didn't see it with Demons because of the fact that they were so disparate compared to the previous books. I think that this is more just take what you had before. It has more options. It's relatively cheaper. Hey, look, we've given you a lot more stuff on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing that I'm happy with is the changes to Ethereals and the changes to the flyers, right? Like, I was really happy with the fact that they didn't make the Tau flyers amazing.
If they were,
because that would have destroyed this entire codex, right?
Yeah,
they need the fact one that thing they that they're only okay at,
right? Well, I also love the fact that they gave everything in this book, you know, relatively low armor. You know, I really like the fact that they kept things in the right direction, and they were very specific about how they were building this list, so that it wasn't just Marines 2.0. Right? Like, you have to appreciate the fact that it does feel like its own book. It feels Alien. It feels Xenos. It isn't just a rehash of Space Marines, which is all that we've seen in 6th edition so far.
The weirdest thing about Tau is it could have fit. The Tau have always been a weird conglomerate between Eldar stuff and Imperial stuff.
That's the wrong exactly. word. Eldar and Imperial Guard, halfway.
Yeah, it's always been kind of like a weird mixed hash between Eldar and Imperial Guard. And this codex finally breaks away enough from both of them. And with the, I hope that it is true that the Eldar Codex is the next codex out, that it they break even farther apart from each other.
All right, so if you are playing against Tau in a tournament, where is your target priority going to be, Danny?
Oh, a lot of it depends on exactly what's in that build, because you can build the army so many different ways. I mean, if you want marker lights, you can be looking at Pathfinders, marker drones, some of the Forge-World units, Skied Rays.
Nerfing the fire.
Yeah, like one of the priorities, I think, is taking out a lot of the marker lights, because they make everything in that army better. I mean, an Ion Tide is great, but when it's boosting an accelerator, whatever charge, and it's not ignoring cover saves, a lot of the times it's not as amazing, right? But if you can get a couple of marker light hits, reduce the deviation on the scatter, ignore the armor saves completely with only two, even if it's like a 2+ cover save goon squad, you're still getting rid of that cover save on 2 marker lights. So I think in a lot of cases, getting rid of the marker lights early, which most marker lights are relatively fragile, so I think in a lot of cases you're trying to get rid of the force multipliers and then start taking on units once they're weaker and once they're less able to defend themselves.
Maddie?
I think what are we talking about again?
Target priority.
Target priority in a tournament setting.
I was drinking priority right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, my bad. I think target priority in this list is definitely the marker lights first. Secondly, I think it's targeting HQs. If you're having a Crisis Commander, or if you have an Ethereal, or if you have Darkstrider or Cadre Fireblade, their HQs are buffing.
Cadre Fireblade.
They're buffing enough, and the HQs can do enough cool things in the list that you're not, unlike most lists where you're just running into combat and trying to kill them in combat, you want to actually shoot these characters. You want to kill them before
short range firefights is the winning
this
strategy.
Is where you want to like really get in there and really like kind of like get precision shots on them, shoot them out, kill them, because they're not tough. You can kill these characters with shooting.
Some of them can be.
Yeah. Maybe except for the Crisis Commander. But the Crisis Commander, if you pound enough fire into him, his bodyguard isn't going to protect him that much. His bodyguard's maybe another than the 2 extra guys?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's capped at 2, isn't it? Or 3?
No, it's 2 now. It's only a dude and 2 more.
Yeah.
It's only Oshova that gets the Wicked Bodyguard.
What, 7? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 7, yeah.
Because that's in no way excessive.
Big time with your bonus.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, one of the things that I appreciate about the Tau Codex is I think they're taking... bit of a tangent, but it'll come back, don't worry. So I think they're taking a lot of cues from Privateer Press on this stuff, where the amount of characters that buff units and all these special rules, and if you sacrifice one action, you increase another one. These are a lot of mechanics that you see a lot in War Machine, and I mean, I make no claims at all about being really knowledgeable about War Machine, but I have friends who play, I watch them play, I know that.
Do you play like you have a pair, though?
Do you?
I do not. I play like I bought 10 Cotter models back in the day.
At War Machine.
How can you talk about War Machine and not play like you have a pair then?
Well, I had a pair. I had like a pair of boxes that I then just kind of put back in the closet. And I mean, that's all that became Kador. But anyway, moving on. Ignoring the ball reference. We're having random gestures from Lang.
Trying to shut Matt up.
But so the army is all about combos. It's all about force multipliers. And if you do have a way like snipers or Vindicar Assassin or whatever it is, if you have like Teleon with a quad gun or something, if you have ways to pick off characters...
Vindicar Assassin would ruin this fucking game.
if you have these ways to remove specific models, you're taking buffs away. Like, there's certain models in that list that can make everything anywhere near them that much better. If you can kill that one model, the rest is that much easier. And I mean... target priority, some people will get scared shitless of Riptides, but you have to realize that you can't kill those quickly. It's just, unless you have a high-strength demon, force weapon, whatever, instant death, they're toughness 6, you can't instant death them. They got a million wounds, they got good saves, they can get better saves.
Yep.
Like, you gotta kill the stuff that you're capable of killing, and you gotta kill the force multipliers. I mean, if you can drop the units, make everyone else better, it makes... killing the rest of the army that much easier.
Well, I think one of the biggest issues with people playing against the Tau is that they're going to be stuck in the situation where they feel hesitant. And it's that hesitance that's going to kill them. You know, you have to understand that this army is going to falter in close range firepower against another ballistic skill 4 type army.
Because as scary as a pulse rifle,
Necrons and Marines are going to do very well against Tau.
Because they're a little bit weaker guns, but they hit more accurately. So you have a tougher guy with a better armor save.
Accurately,
they're going to win that a lot of
the time. Armor save is going to be the big clincher in that type of situation. Weapons.
They can actually take an armor AP4, right?
Right. The big thing here is that you have to understand that you have to be patient about when to charge. And I think that that's what people really need to learn, is that getting in and trying to charge right out of the gates is the death sentence.
Yep. There's a very fine line that you're walking between being hesitant and being suicidal.
The good thing about being a Tau player, though, is you're going to have target saturation, so you're hoping to confuse opponents with that kind of stuff.
Right. But that's the thing, is you have to be very smart, you have to be very patient. If you're playing Necrons, if you're playing Marines, if you're playing another army that's going to be able to deal with them in short-range combat and essentially match their firepower with special weapons, as Danny said, you know, taking a turn of just doing that is actually going to put you in such a good position to charge that you will be able to mop the battlefield up. However, I do agree with Matt here in the sense that target priority to the HQs and to the buffs is going to be the biggest thing. As much as Matt says the game starts in the heavy support choice, that's not your target priority. Dealing with the heavy support choice is an afterthought. If you are able to win the game by dealing with the HQ and the troops, dealing with the heavy support is going to be an afterthought. The fast attack is going to be stuck with drones, it's going to be stuck with piranhas, that's pretty much where it ends.
If you can get first blood on an ethereal, that's 3 points.
That's a huge point. Really cool.
Yes, very much so, right? But I think the first blood is
that's
usually
going to
come from
Vindicar Assassins.
A tank.
When you said Vindicar Assassins, I'm just like, holy fuck, that could definitely ruin someone. That could definitely ruin a Tau player's day. That's like that's almost a one-shot win right there.
Especially
right.
If you stick them on one of those Aegis Defense Line things, where I hate a lot of those net list cheap trick kind of a things, but... Yeah. A Vindicar Assassin on an Icarus Las Cannon, I mean, it won't work against an Iridium guy, but, toughness 5, but you can't look out, sir, against his attacks, even when he's shooting with the emplacement weapon on an Aegis defense line.
There's... And if he shoots an Ethereal,
that's
3 points.
That's a huge problem.
So let's talk about Tau as allies. Matt.
Riptides, honestly. Riptides and Fire Warriors.
Riptides plural or singular?
Plural, depending on what you're allying to. If you're allying to a guard army,
Parent unit, too, makes a big difference, right? Well, like, that was my point, was you only get one elite if you are the ally.
Yeah, what
If you're taking to a guard army, one Riptide. Or if you're taking lots of guard with Tau that get two Riptides, that's also very good too. Okay.
What I think is interesting is you actually, when you talk about Tau as allies, you always have to deal with the fact that you've got HQ troops, so on and so forth, right? But because Tau Fire Warriors are so good as a troops choice, when you look at Tau Fire Warriors with a Cadre Fireblade, that is such an inexpensive ally to put into so many different types of armies. It's something that I think people have to consider in tournaments that allow people to take allies.
I think one of the things that I've been kind of grinning and waiting to bring up is Commander Shadow Sun. Commander Shadow Sun is one of those characters that just has, like, every freaking USR in the book. I mean, she's got Stealth and Shrouded, being a stealth suit, so that confers to any unit she can join.
That's right.
If you can hit another unit that can hit and fade, she can apparently join jet bikes, because jet bikes have that 2d6 assault phase boost move, so she can do that, doesn't slow him down. I think she's one of those characters that can really combo up effectively. I mean, she's got the Stealth and Shrouded to give you a lot of toughness. She can split fire with her fusion blasters. She can bring all kinds of crazy experimental drones to give you, like, one unit within, I think, 12 inches rerolls ones to hit, which is a pretty big deal. Her shield drones are 3+ invuls, so if you can somehow magically get through that Stealth Shrouded, you can still have 3+ safe shield drones. I think there's are going to be some people, especially with Eldar, that are going to be willing to take Shadow Sun just for some comboing up.
And if you Shadow Sun with a stealth team and a good unit of Fire Warriors and you're Eldar, that's pretty fucking deadly.
Well, I think there's some interesting combinations that you can pull
into. Hit and run. That's self-explanatory. She brings hit and run, which is clutch. And if you have a single drone, which she comes with, that's initiative 4, you know, you have somebody with decent initiative for hit and run. I think Shadow Sun's going to sell a lot of kits.
Well, it's also a nice model.
It's one of the best. Right? It's one of the best flying cast ones.
It's also one that you can masturbate to. But one of the things
I guess there's some boobs under there, like only, Samus style.
There's only one Tau model But no, I mean, I think any of the special characters actually work very well in terms of, hey, you should build this type of list. You know, I think there's not one Anshi? That stands out.
Anshi?
I think you can do it with Anshi. I think that there's some weird...
Hey, Anshi's awesome, okay?
I don't mind Space Pope.
But honestly, allying...
That's Anva. Space Pope is Anva.
Oh, Anva is Space Pope. Yeah, Anshi
you can't go wrong
is...
Anshi's the Honor Blade guy. The good close combat ethereal.
He's cheap enough that, sure, why not? But
do you really want to get an ethereal in combat when you're worth that many victories?
He's the most hilarious contradiction in the book. But if you're talking about allies, we're talking about Oshova's bodyguard and Oshova with a small Fire Warrior team and adding that into any list. If you have an 8-man crisis unit team that can target lock and multi-track, so you can shoot like 2 different squads, so you can literally take 4 crisis shooting one thing, 5 crisis shooting another thing, and deep strike that without scattering.
Oh shit, yeah.
And deep strike that without scattering.
Could you imagine that in guard?
Yeah, deep strike that without scattering. Yeah, exactly. Like
with Lehman Russ support.
So you literally drop him behind somebody, shoot 2 different units, so 5 plasma guns rapid firing shoot into a Terminator unit, and then the 4 fusion blasters shoot into the back of a Predator, and then suddenly you have guard support with a bunch of las cannons, auto cannons, and 3 pie plates. Well, thanks for coming out and having a fun time, guys. But and then you still have 8 crisis suits besides behind someone's lines. Like, those guys are still gonna fight in combat well enough with Oshova there.
And if one takes retro thrusters, they can hit and run.
Yeah.
All right. So, what armies do you guys feel, and again, well, I want to keep this short here because we're starting to get to the end of the show here, but what armies, what codexes do you guys feel is going to be the hardest for Tau to deal with? I'm going to start with Danny.
I hadn't thought of this too much. I mean, the default answer for most people is Necrons, right? Because how the hell do you deal with flyers?
It's the short-range fire of Necrons.
You know what's funny?
Be the worst.
It's the old Kryptonite, because the Necrons Codex came right after the old Tau Codex. And the Tau Codex in 3rd edition was really good until the Necrons Codex came out. And it's always been
totally
like
that.
Always been the Kryptonite of Tau is Necrons.
But Necrons, their biggest strength has always been short-range fire. It's always been the fact that because they have Feel No Pain, because they have the 3 or 4 plus save, depending on which unit you're taking, because of the fact that they have high strength, high ballistic skill, you know, any army that's going to allow them to sit in a close range, 12-inch firepower type situation.
Or even with Tesla, they can do it from 24.
And
they
that's
can do it
exactly
from 30
it.
Right?
And they're mitigating all the wounds they're doing, because that strength 5 is you need to be able to wound. And if you're able to get half your guys back,
once you get the cover on top, once you get the Feel No Pain on top.
That's fair, I guess. I don't know.
I think it's really important to actually think about those types of things. So obviously, I think Necrons is the one that I would bring up. I think Necrons are still...
Necrons have always been the Tau Kryptonite.
They've always been Tau Kryptonite. I think they're still going to be Tau Kryptonite because, again, you have to deal with things like Catan Shards.
Destroyers.
Catan Shards are going to be a pain
who,
in the ass.
Who
Not
takes
even
those?
Destroyers. No, fuck Destroyers.
But they're AP4, though. They annihilate
aren't they
units.
AP3?
But that's why
destroyers are AP4, but they annihilate Tau Fire units off the board. Like,
what's
a full
the,
destroyer unit takes a Tau Fire unit off the table every time.
But what's
just,
fair
just,
enough. What's,
fair
the,
enough.
What's the Necron jet bikes? I can't remember the name.
Oh god, Tombblade.
Oh, the Tombblades. Yeah,
Tombblades.
And you love
Tombblades. Yeah, with the particle blasters.
Yeah.
They're AP4
and they
as well.
Tesla too, don't they?
They can take whatever they want.
They can
take
whatever they want.
Huge amount of options.
I like the blast weaponry personally. Well, last time I played my Necrons was with the Tombblades with the particle beamers, the ones that were the blast.
Yep.
And I shredded Fire Warrior squads.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a good
it's
point.
Like,
I mean, it's not a common sight on the battlefield is for Necrons to take these. Because so many players just take the Flyers, they take the Wraiths, and I mean, jobs are good, right? I mean, if you're playing one of those Flying Circus armies, and you come up against a Tau with all the, like, you know, missile sides and all the other stuff, it could put a pretty, you know, huge roadblock in front of you, right? Like, take out a lot of your heavy
hitters. But if you're taking a normal Necron list, like a normal, like, troops, Catan, lots of guys on the field, you're gonna mess pretty much every Tau player up. Like, because they're not having a good day against you at all. And that's always been Necron's kryptonite towards them. Other codexes, I think, that are going to be tough against Tau are Guard, of course, Guard. Guard is always still a tough matchup.
It's simply
for
a good book.
It's a great book. And being able to field that many guys is just, like, even Tau can still not deal with that many guys on the table.
I think that the interesting thing with Tau versus Guard is that Tau now have so much dependable whole point damaging weaponry.
Against AV-14, though?
Right. Yeah. Well,
Lehman Russes are always the big, like, thing against anybody. If you have a Lehman Russ, you're probably doing better than most people.
It has to do with the mobility and the fact that you're able to get side armor on them, right? Like, that's what the big thing is. Even
if you're flanking crude?
If you're talking about quad ion on side armor, that's fucking tanks up. You're talking about riptides, that's fucking tanks up. You're talking about, like, there's so many options here in the Tau book to get on the side armor of tanks that you'd be stupid to shoot at the front armor. Take your time, get into the right position, and deal with troops until you can shoot at those tanks on the side. I think the Tau actually work very well against Guard now, almost to the point where it's kind of a stalemate.
I think it's one of those things where night fighting first and first turn are going to be, like any shooting army versus shooting army, that's going to be huge. I mean, to some extent, Tau, a lot of their units can have either ignore cover saves or black sun filters to get rid of night fight.
Yeah.
But I think first turn and night fight is going to make a huge difference in that Guard versus Tau matchup for sure.
Yeah.
Whoever takes the first, you know, 25% of the army off the board is at a huge advantage.
All right, so I'm going to stop you guys right here. We obviously didn't talk about Vespids for obvious reasons. We did not talk about the Sunshark Bomber. We didn't talk about the Sniper Drone Team. And that's one of the big things that I wanted to get into.
Sniper Drone Team is pretty huge. You can do some cool things with
it. You can do some cool things with it, but I think this Sniper Drone Team is the trick shot. And I think everybody's going to go with the sure bet as opposed to the trick shot nine times out of ten.
Well, it's like taking a Crisis Team in the Elite section, right? Like, it's just, there's so much competition in the heavy support section. They did a lot to make the drone sniper teams better, but they're still not in the echelon that is. The Hammerhead has been one of the premier tanks in 40K for who knows how long.
Yep.
The Sky Ray is now a premier
tank. You're talking about competition in the heavy support section.
Yeah, exactly. And the broadsides have always been, the broadsides and hammerheads have always been premier selections in the heavy support section. They've always been very good heavy support sections. And now you have missile sides and you have a Sky Ray. The sniper teams is just, it's just, you can get marker lights and other little tricks and parlor tricks somewhere else. You don't need to lose one of your heavy support sections for that.
If you go ahead,
it's, I don't know, because one of the things is when I build army lists, I mean, I'm not necessarily the balls to the wall kind of guy, as a lot of people, you know, will attest. I mean,
I've seen your balls; they're not on the wall.
That's true. That'd be kind of an awkward pose. I'm sure it would hurt my back after a while. But anyway, I'm trying to get back to where I was. My head is kind of spinning at the moment. But so sniper drones, like, they have a lot of cool rules, right? Like, they have stealth, so I think in a lot of cases they're going to be your Aegis Defense Line unit if you're one of those kind of people.
Because they're ballistic skill 5. They're denying
victory
points.
Yeah.
Ballistic skill 5, you can have a ballistic skill 5 gun drone, fire an Icarus LAS cannon. You can have a ballistic skill 5 marker light on the spotter. You have stealth behind an Aegis Defense Line.
Well, the fact that you can give yourself 3 more spotters on top of that as
well. Yeah, they're cheap. You can
two more spotters.
And some people have actually been running the math, too. I mean, it's one of those stupid hypothetical builds that no one's going to do, but if you max out sniper drones and you take your ethereals, because those are pulse sniper rifles now with 48 range and rapid fire. So if you start stacking on extra shots and stuff like that, people have actually done the math. It'll never happen, but you can start doing some pretty cool stuff and dropping guys like flies. And you have ballistic skill 5 reliable marker lights. Like, there's a lot of stuff they can do. It is tough to squeeze them in.
The big issue is who would want to touch that Find Cast.
Those are some of the models I don't think would be that suicidal with Finecast, mostly because they don't have super fragile things. They're not going to fall apart on you, right?
All your rail rifles would look like cocks hanging to the right with herpes.
Okay.
They're just not erect for shooting yet. They get erect in the shooting phase.
All right, fair enough. Okay, sure, so close your books, ladies. You know, one of the things I love about the Tau and what we've seen so far is that they've really focused the list. They've really given it so much versatility. They've given it so much. But before we actually end the show, I want to talk about what you guys don't like about this book and what stands out to you as being a real failure, either in vision on Games Workshop's part or in terms of just strategy. Matt, why don't you start us off here?
Vision, and this comes back to something you said, was the Kroot not being a combat unit. I think for the fluff, I did love the old fluff with the Kroot being the combat unit. I think they failed on the Tau Empire. I'm going to finger quotation that.
Yeah.
It's just it's a Tau Codex. It goes back to the 3rd edition Codex where people are just like, oh, you take Tau. It's the Tau Codex. Calling it Tau Empire is kind of like a slap in the face because there's no real reason to take Vespids and or Kroot. And if you're not even going to add a new ally into it for the new edition.
Well, even Guvesa, right? Even Imperial Guard conscripts.
You can do that with allies now.
Yeah, you can do that with allies. And I guarantee that's they're going to be MO with whatever GW says with this thing's gonna be you. Oh,
you can sell orcs you can, and Tau
you can
at the
ally
same time.
You can ally stuff into this list and make it Uvesa and stuff like that. But I think they failed on just the capitalization of it being an empire, yeah. Not just the Tau Confederacy or coalition or whatever Russia, Soviet Russia was. Communism, Tau communism.
Space commies.
I think the only failure here in my eyes is the Kroot and the fact that you had so much opportunity to expand a very prominent race in the 40K universe. Without making their own codex, without making their own rules, you could have really taken the Kroot and brought them to a level where...
The Kroot are older than the Tau.
Yes. Well, just on the fluff side, right? But, like, you could have taken the Kroot and you could have put them on the level where you expanded the story, you expanded the unit options, you gave them the opportunity to really feel like a component of the Tau Empire as opposed to a maybe-sometimes unit. Yeah. I feel like... You know, it goes into what you were saying about the Tau Empire. Nathan said the same thing. You know, Terry said the same thing. We wanted to see this book be a menagerie of races built into the Tau Empire that gave it this opportunity. But the fact that they took the Kroot back a step and they basically just made them Fire Warriors minus one, right? Like, and that's really all that they did. You know, what was the big worry about making a unit that was the equivalent of a unit of Orc Boys? You know what I mean? Like, what was the fear there? What was the terror?
They were scared that they were going to make money selling
in
Kroot.
Communist Tau shoot you. Okay?
That was terrible. Man, you didn't even do that.
I don't think you did that right.
You did that wrong. But Danny, follow that up.
I'm just going to completely move ahead and, you know, blaze a new trail on this one. Like, I kind of agree to an extent. I think they're decent, but whatever. At the end of the day, my feeling for the Codex is, to me, I think they should have redone the Crisis Suit model kit, because that is one of the kits. I mean, Fire Warriors aren't great either. Their hip armor is kind of weird. If you're actually edge highlighting it, it's really hard to make it look decent. But the Crisis Suits used to be the centerpiece of the army, and there's no real reason, like... You can build an army around almost anything else because it looks fucking cool, but the Crisis Suits, unless you're getting the Forge World ones...
They're showing their age.
Yeah, they're really showing their age. They're not poseable. They have a couple of options. They don't have all the war gear anymore. Like,
And we've seen with the new models that they're well aware of the design flaws. You know, one of the big issues is, you know, like the hooves and the ankles and the massive ball hips.
The diapers.
You know? Right, exactly, right? Like,
if you've ever seen a Crisis suit from behind, you know exactly what I mean. They're wearing diapers.
They're wearing diapers.
And they get to reroll their incontinence saves.
You know, they gave them shoulder pads. They did they took a point to make them look more sleek.
Yeah.
And anything we've seen in this new book is definitely a lot nicer, especially the art. I mean, the art is gorgeous. The cover art makes the Crisis suit look amazing, and it looks nothing like the fucking model.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is
the only good Crisis suit picture in this one is the old Crisis suit photo from the third edition one, where the Crisis suits are like this, and they're
like
jumping.
You realize that we're on podcast and not like on
TV. I've done this every episode. I'm already
Matt's posing like people are going
to
see him.
But if you go to the Crisis suit page, there's a Crisis suit picture from the third edition Codex that makes them look amazing.
Yep.
And I wish the Crisis suits looked like that.
But, I mean, on the bright side, the one of the redeeming factors of this stuff, I guess, is the availability of Forge World. And the Forge World models have way more articulation. Like, the knees, the ankles, the elbows, everything is poseable. Like, just like the freaking Riptides and stuff. Like, GW knows where the strength and weaknesses of the models is, but they only address some of these aesthetic design flaws in the fine cast commanders, where, you know, they cost you an arm and a leg. You're only going to want one of them. If they redid the Crisis suits, I could see people actually wanting to put them in the army because they look good. I don't know. That's my personal...
Even with the rules, there was no push to make them better.
Yeah, they didn't need to be better, but at the end of the day, there's not a solid reason to take... Outside of Oshova, there's not a great reason to take the Crisis suits anymore. And that's a shame, because for a lot of people, that was the reason to play the army.
No, I really agree. I really agree with the fact that if you're not taking Oshova, Crisis suits really fall back because of the fact that, you know, they're so aggressive. And you have to be very aggressive. And
Shadow Sun can do that, too. She can buff them up quite nicely.
She can, yes.
She's a good alternative to Shadow Sun, depending on which one you like better.
Shadow Sun is a good alternative to Shadow Sun?
The answer is always Shadow Sun.
All right, so let's get into the viewer, god damn it. Let's get into the listener poll for this week's episode. And Danny, you are the most non-recent guest host, so I'm going to actually go to you for the listener poll for this week.
Well, this is something that some of us gamers in E-Town have been talking about lately is Forge World. And the question that I want to ask today is, do you consider Forge World a viable replacement for some of the shortcomings of the new codexes?
Okay, that's it.
Sorry, yes slash no, I don't know.
Yes slash no. Well, in 6th edition, we've seen a lot of codexes and army books that have come out that have been very specific to certain types of builds, and Forge World has plugged those gaps fairly well. So yeah, like Danny said, the big question is, do you feel like it's a viable option? Do you feel like it's a fair option? You know, I think that that's another question to take into account when you're actually talking about viable and fair and things of that nature, because Forge World is always that enigma.
Yeah, and the difference as well between playing at home and playing in a tournament. Like, if somebody springs Forge World on you in a GT or something where winning and losing actually means shit, that's pretty different. So I know it's something a lot of people argue about all day long. But.
And in the new American team circuit, they're actually making it legitimate to actually take Forge World now. So it actually is a pretty big question, having to be able to add yourself into like maybe a couple, like 20 new units into the game.
Yeah, and with Imperial Armor 3 for the Tau coming out, according to, you know, some rumor stuff, within 2 months, this book supposedly at the printers, we have a brand new book that could be getting dozens of new units with dozens of options, crisis suits, Kroot Narlocks. They could be plugging in a lot of gaps and completely changing how this already new and scary book looks.
That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Maddie.
I'm Dan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.
Peace.